Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 7 of the Good People Bad Intentions podcast. And today I have a special guest. It's Reed Primo. He's 19 years old, and he's just out of Oxford, Nova Scotia. And he's an amateur boxer, and he is known as the Fighting Farmer. And so we're going to get into the story of why the name, any connection to Yvonne Durrell, the Fighting Fisherman, the Fighting Pride of Bay St. Marie, New Brunswick. And yeah, so we're also going to be talking about his amateur career thus far. I'm really excited for having him on, and he's coming on right now. Hello, Reed. How's it going?
It's going good.
Thanks for coming on. Great. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. Honestly, it was a big shock. It made me real happy to see it. I've never done nothing like that.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, what you got an interesting hat. Where did you get that from?
I got it from Lenny Shaw. He gave it to me. He wears them all the time. If you've ever met the guy, he's about 80 years old, I think. And oh, yeah? He goes to all around to these amateur boxing clubs. And
Yes.
Yeah, he gave me this hat. And I was messaging Bridget earlier. She told me to wear it. So I said, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it is. Lenny's a really interesting guy.
Only wear it on
guy.
Certain occasions, so.
Yeah, no, when I saw a name like the Fighting Farmer floating around, I had to have you on the show. I was like, what's this guy? And you were at Tribal for a bit, right? How was your experience there?
Honestly, it was probably the most I've ever learned within 3 days ever. Like, it was amazing. Like, I've never met such like-minded people around. Like, I've always been told to go to a place for training where there's going to be people with the same vision as you, because a lot of the time I go to other places and I just talk to my friends about what I want to do with boxing. I want to be a pro boxer. And they look at me like, man, you're crazy. Like, that's not possible. Like, that's all in the movies. Then you talk to people there and they're like, yeah, man, it's legit. And but they're the ones that are putting in the work for it and stuff. And there's so much knowledge there, and a lot, not just in the coaches, but in the fighters there. Like, every so often a fighter would just give me a little tip, and it's like, this is amazing. This is what I need to be around to get to where I want to be and where I'm going to be.
That's awesome. And so you said that you have a goal of becoming a professional boxer. How long have you had that dream?
Had it since I started boxing, but it wasn't the main focus, you know. I thought of it almost the same way that other people would. All that's in the movies. I mean, it's possible, but unlikely. But about my grade 11 year, once I started to realize that I'm training pretty much mostly every day, and then looking at how much I am compared to other people that are even at the club, it's like some days I'm there completely by myself, completely alone, and it's like, if nobody else is doing this, well, then if someone's going to be a professional fighter, it may as well be me, you know? And shortly after grade 12, I met up with a pro fighter named Jericho McPhee looking for sparring lessons. Mm-hmm. And he pretty much told me, yeah, man, if you want to do it, it's possible. You just got to put in the work like you've been doing. So yeah, ever since hearing that, it's like, all right, that's what I want in life. That's what I'm going to do in life. And that's what I'm going to get. I'm going to have to do whatever it is to make it possible. I mean, I look at other fighters and I might not be as talented, but all that means is that I got to,
You're good.
I got to work harder. I mean, I look at Ryan Ruzicki as a main inspiration. I see that and it's like, I want to do that. I want to be that. If he can do it, I can do it.
Yeah. I mean, he had a very entertaining fight for a new title, a new world title. He didn't get it, but he earned a lot of fans doing that. And
he fought his heart out, you know.
Now he's ranked as I think like number 9, or maybe it's changed, or number 9 as a cruiserweight in the WBC rankings.
It's either 8 or 9, I believe. Yeah.
So he's a big inspiration for you.
Probably my one of my main inspirations that's still living today anyway. It's weird. Before I even knew of Ryan, my favorite fighter's always been Jack Dempsey. You know, yeah. I've watched all his clips, and then I hear my buddy Dylan Ellis, he was coming in and training with us, and he said, yeah, I fought Ryan Urzeki. And I said, I've heard that name before. I check him out, and it's like, oh, somebody that's more obsessed with Jack Dempsey than I am. And it's, wow. I watch his fights, and they're honestly the most entertaining things that are there, you know?
Yeah, he just posted
most entertaining boxer around. Love his fights. I've watched quite a few of his amateur fights, his professional fights. Just a slugger, you know? He's not a normal boxer. He fought usually how I tried to fight my first couple amateur fights. I mean, it didn't work out, but.
So can you go into that? Were your first couple amateur bouts, were you trying to take the person out and you realized you had to have more finesse, or?
No, every single fight I've tried to take the person out. I'm not a real technical boxer, you know?
Okay.
I look at the other clubs, and I look at the way that they're hitting pads, and I look at the way that their coaches are talking to them. And we don't have that here at our club. We got Bob, and he's great. He applies us a gym and everything like that. Uh-huh. And he shows us, but our technique, we fight different. We fight hard, and we just go at it. You know, we're game fighters.
And you're fighting out of just out of Oxford. Is it the Oxford Boxing Club?
The Oxford Boxing Club. Yeah.
How long has that been around? Is it something that's been only for a couple of years or?
About 3 or 4 years, I believe. 2018 or between 2018 and 2019, I think April of 20 or around sometime around 2018, April 2018, I believe it's been around. I've been there ever since the second day of it being open. You know,
really,
we started off. I think we were open for about 2 or 3 months within a building that was next to the fitness gym in Oxford, the Paperweight Fitness, and shortly after that, the rent got increased, I believe, and we weren't able to have the gym and. Pretty much things got shut down, but my coach moved this gym up into his spare bedroom of his house. And it was just me and my friend Landon. And every so often, one of my buddies, Elliot, would hop in and we would just be training out of his bedroom, you know, no AC or nothing like that. It's pretty gnarly, you know.
So how
I just assumed once the club was done that it was done for. No more boxing. I was kind of upset, but that wasn't the case.
So Is that gym no longer a thing now, or?
No, right now, ever since after working in his spare bedroom,
yep.
We had a fight. And then shortly after that, we moved his hunting camp. Bob had a hunting camp in
the
woods.
Okay.
We drug that out, and now that's on his front lawn, and we renovated it, and it's now the boxing club. We recently added an extension onto it. Or Bob recently added the extension onto it, and there's a washroom in there, and it's a really nice place.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's heated by a wood stove, and the best thing about it is that it's pretty much open 24/7. You know, I got a way in there whenever I want. I can go in and train. So if I got to work or do something like that, and I can't be there for the scheduled class or something, or I can't be there help with the kids' class, I can go in and train pretty much whenever I want. And I know other clubs don't have that luxury, and I'm very grateful for it.
And I'm just curious, where did you get this energy, this passion, this hard work ethic? Have you always been like that growing up, or is it something that ignited with boxing?
I think that boxing definitely had a lot to do with it, as well as moving out from the inside of Oxford to out here where there's certain things that need to be done. Like the wood needs to be brought in to heat the house and stuff like that. You know, just certain small chores definitely give you those, give you that passion. But before, I used to be just right into video games. I'd sit down and I'd just play them all day. And it's kind of sad looking back, the amount of energy I put into it. But now it's like almost as much energy, if not more, that I used to put into that, put into boxing now. And it's been full steam ahead for a while.
Well, I was kind of in the same boat. And now you are the video game. You get to control your own self. And
it's so much better. It almost makes them not even interesting anymore. The only game I really play anymore is Fight Night Champions.
Oh, yes.
It's a boxing game, so.
Yeah, they're thinking about possibly bringing another Fight Night game out, because it's been a long time since they last had one.
So. I seen that. I'm so excited. I think I seen like a leaked control scheme of what it's going to be. It's very similar to the last one, but it might not even be real. It's hard to believe when you get leaks and whatnot.
So you mentioned obviously fighting farmer, and you live on a farm. And can you just talk a little bit about the day-to-day chores and like you said, like, so every day you kind of have to wake up and work.
I don't do the majority of it. It's mainly a hobby farm. So before I even moved in here, my stepfather Vince, he was doing the majority of it. So he feeds the animals and stuff like that. Yep. But he's only one man. He can only lift so much. I mean, he's got quite a bad back. So when it comes to flipping hay bales or something like that, you know, I'm the guy to do it. I'm the one usually to lug in wood now. But used to be me and my brother, but my brother kind of just watched me start doing it more, and now he doesn't do a lick of it, which I'm grateful for. You know, every single time that I load wood onto my arms or something like that, I'm thinking, you know, this is going to make my punches a bit stronger. Every so often I load on a bit more just to see how much I can bring in, you know.
When you were at Tribal, did you have an opportunity to meet Kyle McNeil, or do you know the guy?
I sure did, man. I walked right up to him as soon as he walked into the gym, or not as soon, because I was being respectful because he had a private lesson going on. I didn't want to interrupt him, but once Bridget was done working for him, I was like, hey, man, can I get a picture with you? It might sound like a bit cheesy, but I'm a big fan, you know? I pay attention to him a lot, and it's like, man, I want to be somewhat like that guy, you know?
Yeah, because he's I don't know if you knew, he lives on like 100 wild acres of land.
Yeah, lives out in the woods.
Yeah, so in a way he kind of maybe has a similar lifestyle to you, and I know that there is a strength that's behind that, right? Like all those chores, like you said, carrying the wood to and fro and pushing bays of hay. Eventually it all adds up to, you know, strength. And people say all the time that the farmer's strength, right? You know, in their hands, man, like they're just different. So
it's functional too, you know. Yeah. It's not like when am I ever gonna pick up a rock and then do this with it all the time, and just when do you ever do that functionally? But no, it's real. It's full body most of the stuff that you're doing.
Yeah, and it's you know, like a lot of times, like you do these like reps, you're at the gym, right? There's no real progress. You're getting stronger, but you're not actually working towards a goal. So doing work and getting stronger as well, like it's a win-win, right?
And another thing with it too is that when you're in the gym and you're lifting or doing reps and stuff, there's a point where you're able to give up. But if you got a big pile of wood there and it needs split before it rains tomorrow or something, it's going to be more wood. You have to put in more work in between the time. You got to push yourself. It's not about how you feel. It's about what needs to be done. And sometimes that can definitely translate into the gym. You know, sometimes it'll be round 7 into a heavy bag and it's like, come on, I need 3 more. It's not about how you feel. It's about you said that you were going to do this, so you're going to do it, you know?
That's a really important lesson. And yesterday we were learning a really interesting thing at the gym, but not showing pain, you know, because pain's something like a lot of people, when they stub their toe or whatnot, they'll show a sign that they did it. But the problem is that when your opponent sees that you're in pain, they'll try to capitalize on that. So we were doing these Tom McCluskey drills, these old school boxing drills. And, you know, I won't lie. I was hurting. And, the whole point of that drill was, no, you can't show through your face that you're hurting. Cause unfortunately when you're down in the dirt, they see that they're going to kick you even further.
You gotta learn to enjoy the pain, but at the same time, you can't enjoy it too much. I mean, kind of a funny story. I got stopped one of my fights. I fought a fighter from Tribal, and I got stopped. And afterwards, the doctor looked at me and said, "Are you okay?" I said, "What do you mean? Am I okay? I enjoy getting hit in the face just as much as I enjoy hitting the other fella. I believe at one point I even dropped my hands, let the guy hit me, and smiled at him, and then tried to hit him with a haymaker, which, well, missed."
Do you remember which Tribal fighter you were fighting against?
Francis something or other.
Okay, so
I don't believe he fights anymore.
Yeah, I've only been to Tribal since August when I moved back to the city. I'm originally from Yarmouth, and I was training up there for a while, and then I trained at Titans too, at an MMA gym. But Tribal's like the first boxing gym that I've been a part of. So yeah, it's cool that it's interesting. You fought somebody from Tribal, and now you're training at Tribal, and that's awesome. So
I'm not training there. I just went there for one weekend, but I plan on being there. Well, once it seems safe with COVID and whatnot.
Yeah, of course.
Be over there as much as I can. Bridget Stevens and Jim Maloney are just a godsend. You know, I had a hotel planned out, everything like this. And I just messaged her. I said, hey, what time do your guys' club open? And they said, like, where are you staying? And I had a hotel at one point. Then I had a friend in Halifax who was going to stay. And she said, you know, we have food and everything at our house. You can stay with us. And I'm thinking, like, I don't even know you people. But you know what? Sounds even better. And then as soon as I met her, she was letting me stay at her house and getting me food to eat and whatnot. I have never been treated more there. It was amazing.
Yeah, and Bridget, the gym, they're just they're different. There's nobody else like them. They're really humble, nice people. So
they're very awesome. Special people.
Yeah, it's awesome. You had that experience. Yeah. So out of all the places you've competed, a total of, was it 7 times that you fought?
I believe I fought 8 times.
8 times.
2 exhibitions and 6 competitive.
What's been the toughest fight that you've had so far?
My toughest fight was a fella from New Waterford, actually.
Okay.
It was a fella by the name of Parker Doucette. I was messaging him the other day, actually. Uh-huh. He actually has a plan on going pro too. And I said, well, if you need an apartment, then we can end up splitting in Dartmouth eventually and live there, train at a tribal, because it's the place to be. But yep. Parker was definitely the hardest fight, you know. But I don't know how many, he probably threw more overhand rights than jabs, you know. And yeah. When they landed, man, you felt it. You felt it. What? Yeah, that was probably the hardest fight.
Did you fight in New Waterford against him?
Or? Yeah, I fought against him and I won. He stopped.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they've had quite a few events up there. And I'm like, that's really awesome for them that they're having those events. And I think they were, maybe they also hosted provincials, I think. Was it?
Yes, I believe they did. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So the next thing I want to ask you is, when you chose your name, the Fighting Farmer, any coincidence that there is a boxer from in New Brunswick named the Fighting Fisherman? Do you ever hear of him?
I doubt. Lee, wasn't Kyle McNeil lined up to fight against him at one point?
No, this guy is way, way back. Let me get his full name so I give him justice.
But let me know about him.
Yeah, Yvon Durrell. Durrell? Yeah, he's from... Bay St. Marie in New Brunswick. And he got the name the Fighting Fisherman, I believe, because he began in 1948. So he's definitely somebody that never fought Cobb McNeil.
Yeah, oh yeah, but, no, definitely.
But yeah, he was known as the Fighting Fisherman. Unfortunately, he passed in 2007. He was an Canadian champion boxer, fought at middleweight, lightweight, light heavyweight and heavyweight. Standing 5'9" 70-inch reach. What's his final record? Total fights, 115 fights, 88 wins, 49 wins by KO, 24 losses, 2 draws, and 1 no contest. So, yeah, nice. Yvon Durrell, the Fighting Fisherman. When I saw your name, the Fighting Farmer, I was like, is this – I was just curious. I was like, does this guy take an homage to that? But – if you didn't know him, then probably not, but he is, as far as like Acadians, cause I'm from Yarmouth, which is only like 20 minutes away from Clare, a big, Acadian village. And so I've grown up, my grandfather knows about Yvon Durrell. A lot of people there know. And of course, anybody from New Brunswick, knows about it. So who knows, maybe we got the next, fighting fisherman and the Fighting Farmer.
Yeah, you never know.
And so you mentioned you like watching older fights like Jack Dempsey.
Yeah,
what kind of got you into him? You just like the kind of the style that the older boxers had?
Well, when you watch Jack knock Jess Willard 7 or 8 times and Jess stand up, standing over him and just clocking him over and over, how can you not like that? I mean, that's some pretty beautiful violence is what it is, you know, just watching them. I don't even know what ounce gloves. They were less ounce than they fight in the pros now, I believe. Mm-hmm. And just the way that they fought, I like the idea of slugging it out, you know, just banging, 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 old school foam box slugging, you know?
Yeah. That's
I don't want to watch a technical boxing match. I want to watch somebody get knocked down. I want to see someone's head bounce off the canvas. I want to see ribs get broke. I mean, if you watch Jake LaMotta and Ray Robinson,
yes.
LaMotta fought 3-4 rounds with broken ribs. That's just, could you imagine that being your legacy? I'd love to be known for somebody that fought 3-4 rounds of broken ribs, you know? I mean, now you got to really show that you're not feeling it, because they'd stop that nowadays, which is too bad, but it is what it is.
And they used to fight 15 rounds too, which was
They used to fight until rounds used to be till a man hit the floor back a long time
ago. True, even further.
You know, 115 rounds, that means 115 knockouts. What a fight.
Yeah, that's I don't know if we're gonna ever be at that level because of all the safety regulations and stuff like that, but
it was definitely
a different time back then than, you know, not having recordings, you could get away with some little bit of trickery. I mean,
the Pittsburgh windmill, Harry Greb, I mean, by the end of his career, they found out that he was fighting with a glass eye, but he couldn't even see it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He couldn't see out of his left eye. He had a fake eye, you know? But he was a middleweight, and I heard that he wanted to fight Jack for the title once. Uh-huh. And so Jack Hearns, Jack's manager, I believe it was, laughed at the idea of it and put him in sparring. And I guess from the stories, Harry whooped him, you know.
There is a lot of, interesting sparring stories between, yeah, like, you know, a fight wouldn't go through, but then two fighters ended up sparring each other. And that many people's eyes was a fight and things. It's, yeah. So Oxford, have you ever lived in, right into the town of Oxford itself?
Yeah, so I used to live in Chatham, Ontario. It was just the city. Around 12 or 13 years old, I moved into Oxford. I stayed at my grandparents for a little while before my mom ended up getting a trailer down the road from my grandma. And I lived in Oxford for about 3 years, I believe it was. And I moved out here when I was about 15. But I used to live in Oxford.
How has your experience been there?
It was great. You know, the thing about Oxford is that when you go to school and whatnot, there's not a lot of people in your class, you know. Mm-hmm. So you look at the guys that are in your class and boom, that's who your friends are. There's really no picking and choosing, you know. And I thought that was great because honestly, the boys that I grew up with, I wouldn't want to grow up with no one else. They were pretty rowdy, you know. Back at lunchtime, pretty near every day, we'd go back into the nature trail and we would just beat the hell out of each other pretty much. We just wrestle. It was pretty much jujitsu rolling, but with body shots. But if you were to hit the other fella in the face, then it was on. But at the end of the lunch, no, there was no hard feelings or nothing. Boys just went out and fought because there's little to nothing to do in Oxford besides the skate park, and now there's a boxing club. So yeah, it just grew up fighting, you know, just nothing better to do.
So in middle school, you guys were having full-on contests?
I'd say probably grade 9 till about grade 11. About grade 11, the boys usually got cars and they were off to other things. But we were in the woods pretty much just fighting, you know. We would, the thing about it was that there was no judges, you know. How are you going to expect 16-year-old boys to judge a fight? So it went till you tapped, you know. It was mainly chokes. And the main thing is I was in it every day. Some boys just went down to watch, but I went down to scrap, you know. And what had happened was somebody would have me in a chokehold for 10, 15 minutes, you know. The whole fight might be me being in a chokehold, but if I didn't tap and he didn't have the technique to put my lights out, then I won, you know. Then I won because I was able, I didn't win, but I was able to come back the next day and choke the other fellow out or something like that, you know. But mainly just body shots is what I had used.
So you were going there and you didn't have any formal training at the time?
No, the boys were just playing around, you know?
And
then... just playing around, fighting each other for fun.
That's interesting.
It's not like we were hitting each other in their face, but the rule was that if you hit the fella in the face, then it's on. You're allowed to do whatever. I mean, I remember one point I had broke my left hand or my left wrist in playing basketball.
Uh-huh.
And one fella said that he wanted to fight me now that I had a broken arm. He said, I can beat Reed now that he has left hand. Well, I pretty much went into that. And it was a fella, I think he was around 300 pounds. His name was Big Potens, what we call him now. He's a rapper. But we boxed, bare knuckle boxed pretty much. And I mainly just kept touching him in body. I mean, we were scared to hit each other. So it wasn't like we were full on hitting each other like a boxing match or anything like that. It wasn't, but it was very timid, just getting your shots in when you can. But I had a broken left hand. I had a fiberglass cast. So what I did was I measured him out with my right hand. And around this time, my left hand wasn't hurt. So I was using my left hand as a haymaker to clock him on the head with the cast, you uh-huh. know? And I don't know, it would be similar to getting tying a rope to a brick and hitting him. And when I did hit him with it, he felt it. You know, I don't believe he wanted to box much after that.
Well, boxing,
we say it was boxing, but it was really just scrapping in the woods at lunchtime because there's nothing better to do.
It's like those, was it Margarito, whoever that had the whole raps controversy? It's like, or the raps with the cement. And then
yeah,
it's like,
that was he fought Billy something.
Yeah, you kind of had that with the cast going on.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was kind of it was.
So saying all this, it's no wonder why a boxing jump had formulated, because there clearly was some interest in the fighting sport, whether it was like mixed martial arts or boxing. People were interested. So a lot of the people that were in that in the Oxford gym that you're at right now, are a lot of them your friends that might have participated in this?
So when the gym first got introduced, everybody that was in that little nature trail like fight thing, we all went to boxing. And since day one we went, and pretty much I'm the only one left, you know. The competitive boxers out of the club would be me, my buddy Aiden Turner, and some young kids. But yeah, when it comes to my age, there's really only two others that really box, one other that comes in every day.
And you mentioned the other fella, Aiden. How is he doing? Does he have a lot of fights?
Yeah, Aiden is 3-1, I believe. But uh-huh. his first fight ended up getting stopped with 8 seconds left after he beat the other guy. Pretty uh-huh. bad, and then this fight got stopped with 8 seconds left because he had a black eye. Oh, and I believe that fight was stopped because it was main event for Buddy's first fight, and they wanted their boy to win. But it is what it is, you know. It's just controversy. It doesn't matter. Aiden is he's nasty southpaw Philly shell, you know, and it's hard to spar him, you know, hard to land jabs on him, you know. A lot of right hands and left hooks is what I have to use against him, but. It's hard because he's a heavyweight, you know, and that's my only sparring partner is Aiden. I believe he's 185, 190 now, but he used to be 220, 230.
So that's awesome, though, that you got a southpaw to work with, yeah. And you have some experience.
It's really good. It's a blessing and a curse, you know. I'm able to hit him hard, and I know how to take a shot from sparring him, but the only time I've ever sparred or spared anyone my weight would be in a fight is the thing. I believe maybe one other time we went down to the Hubtown Boxing Club and there was somebody around my weight, but I've never really spared anybody my weight.
Does that prepare you though better in the sense that you're able to take more, or is it they're more athletic, they're more fast?
I don't believe it helps. I think it's a blessing and a curse, you know. At the same time, you know, if I want to go in there and brawl with the guy, I believe it'll help. And that's what I want to do 9 times out of 10. But then at the same time, I'm not used to quick punches coming at me. I remember my last fight, it was against a fellow that I fought twice, Evan Billard. And he hit me with straight punches and they're coming at me lightning quick. Meanwhile, I'm just throwing all I got into single punches, double punches, you know, just, throwing overhand rights with much power, because that's what I'm used to working, you know. less punches, not punches in bunches, less speed, more power, you know?
Yeah, those are key things. And, you know, I was watching, like you were saying, you were watching some of Riziki's fights, and I watched his first amateur fight. He had it on Instagram like 2 days ago. You probably saw it.
That was against one of the fellas that comes in and coaches us sometimes.
Okay. Because I was watching him and I could see right away. I was like, okay, he's trying to take him out.
Yeah. And then that fellow's from Oxford as well.
Okay. And that buddy that was against him was eventually was able to choose his shots, punches and bunches, like you said. And
yeah,
I think he won that fight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause he
won on a unanimous decision, I believe.
Because unfortunately some of the most like brawling is a really, really fun and entertaining style. But it is very one. Yes, true. And it's also really one dimensional. So like you could kind of say, okay, this guy, he wants me up close and, you know, I gotta get myself. I mean, I'm kind of a brawler too in a way. So I can totally see where you're coming from, but yeah, like I was watching that fight and I was like, okay, well he's trying to, you know, trying to take a buddy out. Right. And as long as buddy, you know, is able to weather the storm, so to speak, you know, he should be good.
But you can get into technical brawls too at the same time. True. You know, those are just beautiful to watch.
Yeah. You like Gotti War? Yeah.
Oh, I've watched all three Gotti of Ward. Them, man. Watched all three of them. Love them. Love it.
That's awesome. So Ward, you know.
Ward won the first or the second, was it? And Gotti won the other two.
Yes.
Was it the first or second Ward one? I forget.
I think it was the second. I think Gotti won the first one. He might have won the third one. I can look it up real quick.
I know Ward only won one of them.
Gotti. Look this up real quick.
Find it out for me.
Yeah, it's good to know what actually happens. In boxing, and it's cool, like you can just look up a fighter's box rec, and
box rec is an amazing thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of
Every so often somebody will tell me that their grandfather was a boxer, their uncle was a boxer, and I'll say, what was their name? And then I'll Google them up on box rec, and it's like, oh, they weren't lying, this is who they are. And then I show them and they're like, I didn't even know that much, man.
Gotti actually lost the first fight and then won the next two. So
okay, that's how.
So Ward won the first by majority decision, and then it was Gotti that won unanimous decision the last two. So I'm glad I was able to set the record straight, because sure anybody that's a huge fan, like I don't know if you knew, but Bridget's coach Dickie is Mickey Ward's brother and Mickey the trainer. And trainer. So those brawling fights are kind of home, home for him, because that was his brother, and you know Mickey Ward's a legend as well as Gotti, and I never realized till like I know that Gotti's a I always knew Gotti was a Canadian, but I was watching some like Montreal like national team boxing like videos. And he was competing out of Quebec, and he spoke French. Yeah, I didn't know that. So neither did I.
It's cool to learn.
Yeah. So we kind of covered a lot about boxing. I'm just curious. Do you have any? So we also talked about how you used to game and whatnot. Any other passions that you have or?
Right here. Right here.
What is that? I firmly
believe in Jesus, you know.
Okay.
The past few summers I've worked at a Baptist camp, Camp Pegwiak.
Uh-huh.
The last summer that I worked there, I only worked there for 2 or 3 weeks because I didn't plan on going back. I didn't think it was in my schedule, but then I went down for a volunteer 1 week and as a counselor the other week, and I'm also a youth leader within my local youth group in the church.
Really? Can you talk a little bit about what it's been like being a youth leader?
Well, the main thing is not mainly being a youth leader, but being in the youth group growing up, I know that it can definitely steer you in the right direction, you know? Because if I didn't have the youth group or something like that, I could end up right now, I could have been a drug addict or an alcoholic or something like that, because there's not a lot to do in Oxford. And I definitely would have been interested in other things, and that would have taken me away from boxing. But because I had a youth group and that support and the church to back me up, I mean, my church ended up buying my boxing shoes that I wear.
Really?
My youth pastor ended up buying my headgear as well as my groin guard. And we'd called it a sponsorship, but I guess in amateur boxing, you're not allowed to do sponsorships. I was going to get a patch put on my shorts for his honey farm that he had used to raise the money for this stuff. And I'm very appreciative for the youth group. It definitely steers kids in the right direction, you know? I've used to preach a small amount, a little bit at the youth group when I had the opportunity to, but I'm there every so often setting up games. Recently, I haven't been as active in it as I would like to be, but recently I've been getting a bit, coming back to my roots in that, you know?
And you
reading a bit more and whatnot, and COVID shuts most of the things down at the moment anyway, so it's too bad. But as soon as things are back on, I would really like to start volunteering a bit more of my time because I'm able to, you know, and it's the right thing to do.
You touched on quite a few things. One thing that hit home was about where you're from. You know, a lot of people when they're bored, they unfortunately get into some bad habits. Yarmouth, where I'm from, has the same problem. It's a fishing town, and there's not a whole lot to do. There's obviously seniors place, but there's not a lot of stuff for youth, and unfortunately they get involved with some bad stuff. So I'm glad that the youth group for you was an outlet to get out of that, and also boxing later on was. But I could totally
myself.
Yeah. And I could totally, you said that you did a bit of preaching in the past, and I could totally see that, because you're a really good speaker. Like, just talking to you, you're a really good speaker. And so I'm not surprised at all that that's something that you've done and that you're interested in. So, that's awesome that you do that. And, so do you do some type of, you're like chaperoning or helping out with the youth, today?
So the most recent thing I probably would have done would be attending the Christmas party for there. Uh-huh. We played games and whatnot. Uh-huh. Just running games every so often, just being the one to set up certain games. Like, some of the games that we would play at, camp, I would relate to the youth group and help out with that.
Well, certainly doing something just, like that,
organized
games. It's really rewarding. Yeah. And like it's keeping people, like other kids or whatever that you were at one time, keeping them occupied, which is really important.
Definitely.
And on a side topic, what type of music do you like?
I like everything, everything? I like, most Saturday nights I like to listen to the Hoedown, the Saturday Night Hoedown 95.1 FM, from 6:30 till about 9:00. They play all request music, old country music. That's probably one of my favorite genres, like Hank Williams, Merle Haggard, and that type. But I also listen to quite a bit of rap. My fighting song, the song that I walk into is Thank God I'm a Country Boy by John Denver. That's the song that always comes on before all my fights. And
do they have walkout music for most fights? I've never fought.
I've never been to a fight where there hasn't been walkout music. The last fight that I was at, it was in last fight I was at was in Escazoni. Uh-huh. And we never ended up telling the person what my walkout song was, so I walked out to absolutely no music, which was fine with me, I was there to fight, not listen to music and dance and sing,
I thought they're gonna put on Barbie Girl by Aqua.
be kind of like that one time Mike Perry asked for Halo music and he got Halo by Beyonce.
That's kind of embarrassing. That's true. You gotta make sure
good thing
your
they
DJ
didn't do that.
Yeah, Yeah. So do you, you mentioned Mike Perry. Is MMA something, a sport that you follow as well or are interested in?
Small amount, you know, I'm open-minded to it, you know, a goal within the next few years, maybe take an amateur MMA match, but uh-huh. I'm not there yet. I'm not there with my grappling. I go to MMA class when I can. I hope to go tonight, actually, to MMA. It's on Tuesdays and Thursdays at Breakthrough Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
The person that's been showing me a lot of boxing recently would be an MMA fighter, you know. I messaged Jericho McPhee. He's an up-and-coming professional MMA fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed me a lot of boxing. I remember he had a post on asking for sparring partners. I said, I'm just an amateur boxer, but I'd be willing. I'm not skilled enough. He said, it's not that you're not skilled enough. You just don't have the experience, the coaching. And he told me when I in the DMs on Instagram that he would be willing to train me one-on-one as long as I give 100% and he wouldn't charge me a lick. And he's never charged me any. He showed me so much. He ended up running my corner for a few of my fights. And without Jericho, I'd be pretty lost, you know. I don't think that I would have that passion to be a pro fighter. I wouldn't see it in somebody else, and I wouldn't have somebody telling me, you know. I seen a post by 50 Cent. It said look at the people that you talk to for no reason. You'll be just as successful as the people you talk to for no reason. You know, if you ain't got nothing going on and you're having a conversation with somebody that don't got nothing going on, what do they have to give to you? But no, ever since I've been training with Jericho, I called Jericho one of my best friends. You know, we hang out a lot. We train together and this and that. And I've learned so much from him. You know, he was the one that got it into my head that I need to get out from where I'm at. Not because it's a bad place to train or anything like that, but because it's not, it doesn't have the resources as much. It doesn't have what tribal would have. So he had offered, next time I go down to Montreal or something, why don't you come down to me and train at TriStar?
Oh, wow.
And I had it in my head that I was going to go train at TriStar for quite a while. And, you know, down the line, I may even be there, but right now it's looking like tribal is going to be the place that I'll end up at.
Yeah. Hey, you're Jericho. Yes, he might be a pro MMA fighter, but he is a pro. And so it's really awesome that you're able to see what a pro is all about, because you know, regardless of what sport you are in, and it can be regardless, it could be an NBA player or whatnot. There's an understanding of showing up when other people don't, always being there, filtering your emotions and all this stuff, the stuff that I'm trying to learn at Tribal right now. Like, being a pro is a really important thing. And I'm really glad that you're able to become good friends with one and maybe and eventually learn what it's like, because, you know, your dream of being a pro boxer isn't crazy. So any of the people that might have said that earlier on, maybe it was because you were just starting out or whatnot, but it is by no means, at least from my understanding, a crazy thing. I mean, you're as long as you're hard working, which I could see that you are, especially from all your social media posts, keeping yourself accountable and showing it, you know, showing your work. So yeah, it definitely seems like a No, just going out, not like somebody like me, no fights at all. Being like, yeah, I'm going to be the undefeated, undisputed, you know, all the belts, you know, that might be crazy in and of itself because it's not achievable at this time, but definitely a pro
debut.
But if
that's what you want, you can do the things to make that attainable. There's nothing stopping you.
Yeah.
There's the only things that are stopping you are just, They're not real. They're just the ideas that we get that people have to do this. They have to go to school. They have to go to college. They have to get this certain job. They have to have a wife and kids and that. But if that's not what you want, that's not what you have to have, you know?
For sure. Now we're getting relatively close for time. And I just wanted to ask you, before we get going, is there any competitions that you're working towards that you know of right now? Or I suppose everything closed down. There's not a whole lot of
everything is shut down. The most recent competition that I was hoping to be on was the pro card in Dartmouth. You know, I had a fight lined up for that, but then they took the amateur fights off that card. So And then after that, my coach said there might be like an opportunity to spar there. And I said, yeah, definitely line me up for that. And then later that night, he called me, said, no, there's nothing for the amateurs going on. But the next big thing that I might be going to would be the Brampton Cup, whenever that is. Our club's going to start raising money for that because it's been postponed. I mean, if it was when it was going to be, I don't believe we would have had the opportunity to go because we hadn't fundraised enough money. But I plan on doing that. And just whatever fights are available that I'm able to go to, if there's a fight and it's possible for me to be there, even if there's another coach that has to run my corner, anything, drive me down on the bus or something, hook me up with a coach to run my corner, I'll fight. I look at all these pros, they have 100+ amateur fights. An amateur fight doesn't mean nothing to me but experience. I want to get as many as I can, you know? Right now I have more losses on my record than wins, and I don't care if it always is that way, you know? That doesn't matter to me. It's experience, and I'll fight till I can't anymore because I'm medically unfit, or, you know?
That's what I want to do. I'm glad that you learned that, because I think some people in the amateurs, they look at their record and they say, oh my God, like, you know, this or that. But and even in the pros too, I mean, it's not about the record. It's about the fights that the guy has. Does he have entertaining fights? Does he have, you know, how does he do under pressure? Like when he's going against somebody that's the same level or even higher, is he able to still win? You know, those are the more important things than, you know, because a lot of times, especially in boxing, as you may very well know, especially now, you know, boxers that are 20 or 30 and 0, they get those fights because they have really good managers that are able to, you know, get them fights that they for sure are going to win. And then then they test them then. And then now with like sports like MMA and the UFC, no, we're going to actually give, challenges really early in their career. And we realize, okay, well, these are really competitive fights, but in boxing, there's tends to not be as much. And that's just because of, again, the business side of boxing. But
definitely,
certainly you having that understanding about amateur fights shows to me that, you know, you're understanding that, you know, that's not the record's not everything.
Yeah. I remember being upset after my loss ever since Jericho trained me. I had it in my head, I'm training like a professional, you know, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to outclass this guy. And that's not what happens. That's not what happens. No matter how hard you train, you're going to have that competition. It's going to make it easier, but it's not going to make it the easiest thing in the world. And I looked at Jericho, I said, I just lost. Are you still going to train me? And he said, he laughed. He said, of course, man, I'm going to train you. It doesn't matter to me. You're going to have 100 of these, man. When you go down to, if you go down to Montreal, there's going to be fights every weekend. You know,
that's true.
So that's the thing. Just as many fights as I can get.
Fights in the gym, honestly, too, in Montreal. That's what I hear. It's like it's
having a terrible record. Don't mean nothing. You know, even if I don't get high level pro fights, if you put me in the squared circle and I'm able to break someone's rib or turn the lights off or break an orbital bone, man, that's awesome. I'm happy. That'd be awesome to do. Being remembered is someone able to do that. It'll happen to me.
I look at somebody like Riziki that you admire, and certainly he's not the only person, but being a pro in the amateurs, unfortunately, a lot of the times isn't able to be shown because, you know, those skills like being able to take a lot and whatnot and not show or wilt or show up, those things show up in the later rounds, right? And unfortunately with like amateur, with only three rounds, you know, it tends to be like, you know, who can get off the fastest and who can, you know, score the most points.
It's a different game. But either way, each person has punches that they can throw. And if you hit somebody on the chin hard enough, they're going out. No matter what rule set you want to put around that, if you can hit somebody on the chin hard enough within them 2 minutes, they go out, they go down.
100%.
That's just the way it works. If you hurt somebody, doesn't matter what the rule set is, you know? At the same time, you got to be able to work with the rule set because that's not how it's always going to work. You're not going to have those opportunities to lay it on someone's chin or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So,
I'm nowhere even close to being a pro, you know. I'll probably have another 50, 60, 100, maybe even more amateur fights, you know. That's just the way I like to fight, is hit as hard as I can, you know. try not to take a few hits, you know, but it's inevitable.
And last thing, if people want to get in contact with you, what's your social tags? What's your Instagram?
The Fighting Farmer. Mm-hmm. The_fight_farmer. And then on Facebook, Reed Primo. And then Instagram or Snapchat is ITZRed27. Single, ready to mingle. Hit me up.
Is it cool, ready to mingle?
Bridget told me to drop that in there. So
Bridget.
I can't disappoint her. No, I don't mean that though. Stay away from me. I gotta train.
Yeah, I mean, stay away from him. He has to train, but single, ready to mingle.
No. Don't talk to me. Please. I gotta train.
Of course. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. This is not going to be the last time that we have you on. We're going to have you on in the future as well.
Anytime, brother.
Yeah, really, really looking forward to how your 2022 shapes up. I know that, you know, there's not a lot of fights going on in this particular part of the world, but certainly there are, like I had Sean Finnegan
either
on.
Either way, I'm going to be in the gym. My gym's not shut down, so you can expect big improvements. You know, if you want to watch my last fight, then watch the next one. You'll definitely see improvements no matter what. Regardless of how it goes, I might not even have a fight in 2022. There might not be fights in 22, but I'll still get better either way.
True. 100%. I was just saying that Sean Finnegan, I had him on yesterday. He was saying he's going to be fighting September 29th in New York. A lot of amateurs in this area, if they're looking for experience this year, unfortunately, you might have to look towards the United States, because that's the only place that really doesn't have restrictions. Everywhere else in Canada does. I'm not saying that that's something you should do, but certainly anybody that's listening, that's the consensus for this year. Yeah.
It's good to know, you know, if my coach would be able to do that or willing or whatever, then definitely.
But Brampton,
I'm able to fight.
Brampton's an opportunity that you should pass up. It's some of the best competition for the country.
Definitely. That's what I want to do, because it's also close to Chatham, where I originally grew up. My family down in Ontario can see it. I think that would be very special. My father would be able to see that.
That'd be an awesome fight to have then.
Be amazing.
All right. Well, you take her easy. Nice talking to you.
Yeah. You too. Have a good one. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Good People, Bad Intentions podcast. I really enjoyed talking to Reed Primo. It was certainly inspiring hearing him talk about boxing, talking about the fight club that he had going on. And it's no wonder that, you know, there's been a boxing club that's opened up in Oxford. There seems to be an interest there. I'm really excited to see what his year looks like in 2022. And, you know, I'd love to see him also train at Tribal. That's a little bit of a bias. That's where I train right now, but it'd be wonderful to see him there, see his boxing and, firsthand. And yeah, it's always wonderful when you have, people that, I mean, I'm 24, he's 19, but younger people that are really into boxing, because, you know, this sport, needs people like Reed, you know, especially in this area, because we do have a history of boxing. So, you know, he's keeping the history alive by being interested in it as much as he is. So that's wonderful. I hope everybody has a good rest of your day, and as always, stay safe.